Welcome. I'm Victoria Schnepps, president of Schnepps Media, and delighted today to be talking with Dr. Robert Prezant, who is the president of Farmingdale State College in our wonderful Long Island, and has come from Connecticut and now transplanted to the beautiful Long Island, but doing big things because he has a vision and building a new state of the art computer science center at SUNY. It is a SUNY campus, and his goals of having research, developing scholarship for his programs and partnerships in the community make him a very proud A-lister. So officially welcome, A-lister, Dr. Robert Prezant. Welcome.
Thank you, Vicki. So glad you invited me to join you.
Well, you know, I'm an educator by profession. My master's degree is in education. I was a teacher first. And then I went on to have, I'll share with you my later life, but I formed the media company in my living room with one newspaper. And it was all about advocacy. And so we're very much involved in the community to this day, 101 media outlets later, and to be delighted to cover Long Island and the people that make Long Island great. And it's been a journey for you, but you know, it all starts someplace. Where did you start in you that made you successful to become who you are today? Was something in your family or something that inspired you to be young when you were younger?
Yeah, I actually have great clarity there in terms of my roots and how I ended up where I am today. Born in Brooklyn.
Oh, I was too.
There
what neighborhood?
Come. Flatbush.
I grew up in the Midwood section, went to Madison.
Not too far away.
Where'd you go to high school?
We moved to Queens.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Grew up in.
I moved to also. What part?
Bayside.
I did too. We started the papers in Bayside.
Wow.
Right. In my living room in Bay Terrace.
There you go.
The Birchwood Towers.
So very close. I went to Nathaniel Hawthorne Junior High, PS 188, Martin Van Buren High School. So my roots are right there.
Right there on Union Turnpike or Hillside Avenue.
The Union Turnpike and Springfield Boulevard was my domain.
Okay, that's a good domain, even today.
But in terms of, you know, my roots and where I landed as a biologist, because from a disciplinary point of view, I am a marine biologist.
Oh.
I grew up in Alley Pond Park.
Okay, that's a good place to start with the Alley Pond Environmental Center, there on Northern Boulevard that has grown beautifully.
Right there, and I spent a lot of time down at a little pond in the park and a lot of time collecting the animals that lived in that pond.
Aww.
So I would bring them back. We had a tiny little garage. You couldn't really fit a car in it. And there were some shelves in it. I had small aquaria and jars, a lot of pickle jars. My father liked pickles. And the animals that came out of the pond ended up in my garage, and I found them fascinating. And there was little doubt that I was headed into a role as a biologist at some time.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because I have adopted a frog as a philosophy, because I'm not sure you understand a frog is, I am told, and maybe you'll correct me, the only species on Earth that cannot turn its head to the left, cannot turn its head to the right, cannot look back. A frog can only look forward.
Wow. I like that. It's hard to find the neck on a frog. It's buried in there in its skeleton, but yeah, okay.
So you are looking forward from that frog experience, I'm sure. You collected frogs.
Oh, I had frogs.
Right.
Absolutely.
Of course.
Absolutely.
That was my first thing in school was, you know, you dissect a frog.
That's right.
But nobody told me about it. Looks forward.
Interesting. Never put the philosophical spin on a frog before, but I will now.
Okay, you got it. I'm delighted to share it. And so from that, where did you go to school? Did you center on a school that would give you some broadening of that, I guess, passion?
I did. I went to Adelphi University.
Oh, good.
Here on Long Island. And I was lucky enough to take a course in invertebrate zoology with Dr. Margaret Simpson. And that was the turning point for me because Dr. Simpson, she had a reputation as being a very tough instructor. And she said to the class on day one, she said, nobody in this class is going to get an A Unless you teach me something I couldn't have learned on my own.
Wow,
There was no
what a
Google,
motivation.
didn't have a computer in my pocket back then, didn't have AI to turn to, and I worked hard. It was a challenge. I love challenges. I tried to find something she couldn't have learned on her own. At the end of the semester, I got my grade. I got a B plus. But Dr. Simpson said to me, I saw you working really hard. I saw you focused on trying to discover something that I couldn't have known on my own. How'd you like to work in my laboratory?
Oh,
That was it. There was no turning back after that.
isn't that fabulous? Now, how does one go from that world into the academic leadership role? That's not an overnight trip.
Wasn't overnight. It's a process. So I got my undergraduate degree in biology, went on to do master's work at Northeastern University at the Nahant Marine Laboratory, had a great experience there, and it was clear that I wanted to create a career that would have stepping stones in it. So went on to the University of Delaware. And at their College of Marine Studies, which is in Southern Delaware, beautiful location, got my PhD. Went on. I really wanted to be a faculty member because there's no other world other than being a faculty member at a university where you can teach what you're passionate about, do research on what you're passionate about, and train students to follow in your footsteps, if you will. So I took a faculty position, born in Brooklyn, remember, took a faculty position at the University of Southern Mississippi.
Wow, what a trip that is. What a
That was a
difference
trip.
in the world cultures.
But it was great. I had a great launch to my career there, spent 5 years there, brought my students down there to the Gulf Coast. It was very close. They have the Gulf Coast Research Lab there. Had great experiences on their barrier islands there, learned how to deal with alligators down there. Marvelous experience. But after some time, my wife and I decided we needed to be back in the Northeast. So
Going
bounced
home.
to
No place like
no
home.
place like home. And we took a little circuitous route to get back home. We ended up in Western Pennsylvania. Where I became chair of the biology department at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. And then came back to the New York area, became a dean at Queens College, crossed the river to Montclair State as the dean of the College of Science and Mathematics, went up to Connecticut, as you alluded to at the beginning, and became provost at Southern Connecticut State University. And finally, came home here to Farmingdale, back in the old neighborhood, surrounded by family.
I love it. What a great journey. And what it also shows is you can't be afraid of change. And that's really, I think, a lesson that has resonated with a lot of people, that they can explore new things. And with Farmingdale, you are back, kind of in your roots, not far. It's not far from Brooklyn to Farmingdale. But I wonder now your vision and what you hope to achieve as president of this university, a college.
It is part of the State University of New York. And the college is a wonderful institution of higher learning. We have about 10,000 students here, a very good place to be this day and age. Our enrollment is solid. We expect it to grow. The faculty here are dedicated to our students in a manner I haven't seen in a lot of places. The
Interesting.
focus here is on making sure our students have an opportunity when they graduate, making sure they have everything they need to face what the future holds. And the future is complicated right now, but our students have a very good return on their investment. And the investment is very inexpensive. Tuition in the SUNY schools is very low.
Well, I
So
think it's the bargain of the education world.
I think
Between
you're
the
right.
quality and the price, I don't think there's any competition. And I think getting out the word of what you offer, because you also have this wonderful diverse Student body. Talk a little bit how that impacts some of the things, because I'm a nut about preparing people for life.
And that's what college is about. So, there's a lot of de debate right now about the value of higher education, which is fascinating to me that we would be having the debate now. It's not just about the classroom setting and the education you can get from the curriculum, but it's the experience that you get as a college student. It's meeting people from all over the world of different cultures and different backgrounds and different learning and different opinions and attitudes. That's hard to come by outside of a college setting. So we're thrilled with that. And as you mentioned, we have a very diverse student population here. And we have a group of students who are absolutely focused. They're smart, they're high hardworking, they're high achieving, and they know how to build their own future, which is great. It's not just energy, it's that hard work, it's that focus on what comes next. So I'm really impressed with our students here at Farmingdale.
And I know with the evolution of AI, how is that impacting and how are you coping with that and how are you leading that technological breakthrough for us all?
Yeah, that's another really interesting debate that's happening on college campuses across the nation. You can come into this and go, you could wring your hands and go, oh my gosh, what are we going to do with AI? It's offering so many challenges. The students are using it in such evil and terrible ways. Well, you could say AI is here. What a wonderful tool. What can we do with it to expand education, to move things even more quickly than we have in the past? This is a moment that some people put akin to when Texas Instruments first brought hand calculators to the college classroom, and people are going, they're going to lose their skills. We can't bring that. No, you use it. You use it as a resource, as a tool to move forward. So, as most colleges, we're exploring the best use of it. Yes, there are opportunities for students to misuse it. But you deal with that. You deal with that, and there are ways and approaches we're discovering to deal with that and to take AI and help our students move forward.
Well, I think that it's almost to me like when, the World Wide Web came in. I mean, did we
Right.
understand what impact it would have? So I'm agreeing with you 100%. I tell my staff to embrace change, but you also have to be educated in how to use the tools. So are you offering classes and how to use the tools? Because we're thinking of running a seminar for business people about how AI can help you build your business.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea because that's exactly what it can do. And the answer is yes. We have a variety of ways we're bringing AI into the college community. You do the usual, you run workshops and programs, but you also thread it through the curriculum. You offer programs. So we're offering a program, a degree in AI. As you mentioned, I think earlier, we're putting up a new computer science center, and that will be the home for all things computational and AI. So we'll have programs in AI, programs in cybersecurity. And who knows what disciplines are going to emerge now, because AI is going to help us create new disciplines.
Absolutely. To me, it's here and it's the future. So why, you cannot ignore the future. It is in our face and we better be facing it.
That's right. That's absolutely true.
But I think, is yours a campus that has any residences or is it a commuter school?
It's mainly commuter. We do have a few residence halls here. Less than 10% of our students stay on campus. We're actually looking to figure out a way to bring more students to stay on campus. As we have a greater reach across the country and the world for that matter, we want to bring students in from farther away to further, help our students appreciate the diversity of the planet.
Well, I'm not about bringing my staff back. We have about 300 employees, and they got very used to working remotely.
Yes, that's that.
How'd you deal with that?
Most of our employees are back. And have been back for a couple of years. We have, I think it's approximately 20% of our courses are online, and we're going to try to cap it around that 20% mark. Hands-on experiences, having the faculty member there with you, I believe is critically important. And we're a school that requires, and I'm going to underscore the word requires, experiential education. So
How
applied
do
learning.
you define that? How do you define that?
Hands-on is the easiest way to describe it. Our students are required, not recommended, like most schools recommend. We require hands-on education. So our students have to do research in a clinic, in a laboratory, in a business office. They have to do, or they could do an internship, something in the professional world, but they have to be out of the classroom doing hands-on scholarship, if you will, activities. Learning.
Well, I think that's how you learn, by doing. You know, I've got my my degree in education, and my best year was my student teaching.
That's right.
I learned so much that the classrooms could never have taught me.
I go back to my undergraduate education. I took some wonderful classes, but after Dr. Simpson said, "Would you like to work in my lab?" and I went into the lab, that's where my learning took off.
Yeah, well, you know, if I gave you a magic wand and said, okay, I'm going to give you this money wand, and you can have as much money as you want for a project. What project would you want to see your money used for now?
Yeah, so that's
Your legacy for the next, maybe you'll be there 5, 10 years.
we'll see. It's not totally up to me.
I know.
You know, the focus here in applied learning is so critically important. I've got a list. I'm not going to give you my list. I've got a list.
Okay.
You know, they include building other facilities and equipment and residence halls and I have an array of things. But at the end of the day, if we can use funding to better support our students' learning, that's where I'm going to go. And that means, you know, paid internships. It means opportunities for our students to travel the world, to have that applied learning, experiential education experience. It means making sure our students have the time, because a lot of our students work. These students they're not just working part-time. Some of them are working full-time. Some of them have families they have to support, and they're going to school, taking a full load. If there's a way for me to relieve that a bit in terms of giving them the funding they need so they could dedicate all of their time to learning and applied learning and experiential education, that's where I'm going to put it.
So let me ask you this, you know, a big thing for families, because in Brooklyn, there's a Brooklyn school that I met the president, and he actually put in a daycare center because that was the major issue and expense to be able to have that available to them. And then he put in a free Metro card, and then he put in a food bank where everybody could have breakfast, lunch, or dinner. And guess
Nice.
what? Like you, his enrollment grew
Yeah.
and stayed. Kept keeping your students, right, to graduation.
Very
Better than
important. Very important. We have a food bank here that is well used, and we have a child care center.
all right, two check. Now all you need is the
That's
free transportation, like our mayor wants to have, right?
Absolutely. We don't have a Metro card. We don't have a subway.
Well, you know, it's a very car dependent society that we have on Long Island. But you
Is.
know, it sounds like you've been doing a great job. And what would you say you could give others advice in terms of how do you be so successful? Your path has been to the top. And how do you advise others to achieve success?
So, something I learned from my father. My father, I told him, was an immigrant. He came over here when he was 14, came over alone, ended up opening an auto repair shop in Bedford-Stuyvesant in Brooklyn. Worked hard. He made it very, very clear the path he took was not going to be my path. This is about work ethic. Ben Franklin was right. 99% perspiration, right?
That's right.
You work hard. Don't be afraid of creativity. If you have an idea, put it on the table. but you have to work to make it happen. Don't count on others around you coming to your rescue. It's about you. So I think a combination of a few things. One, work ethic. Two, learning is a lifelong process. Never give up learning. Don't ever think you know more than the other people. You probably don't. And really important to me in terms of my administrative role, I buy into the golden rule. I know it sounds corny, but you want to be treated well, treat other people well. That combination of hard work, keep learning, ask questions, don't be afraid of change, and treat people well, I think it's the key.
Well, you've been living that lesson, and your father taught you well. So I have been delighted to be talking with Dr. Robert Prezant, who is the president of Farmingdale State College, part of the great SUNY system. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your insight. Thank you for sharing your wisdom, and great success with a very special school.
Thank you, Vicki. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Bye now. This is Victoria Schnepp signing off. Until next time.